We can start with Pastor AJ.
Start with me. Hi, guys. I'm AJ Komoda. I'm from Suffern, New York, in Rockland County, just outside the most northern tip of New Jersey, in International Christian Fellowship. I serve as the associate pastor there, where I get to focus on things like developing relationships with young families, as well as be one of the main people pushing community involvement and evangelism. I also serve as the president of the Global Baptist Association in the Northeast area, where it's a collection of churches and church plants that work together to network so that they could promote church health for the sake of planting as well. Glad to be here with you guys and just show you guys that we are more alike than anybody thinks.
Awesome. Hey, I'm Dan Woodcock. I actually pastor Cornerstone Church. I'm lead pastor in Gadsden, Alabama. It's a huge metropolitan area, about an hour from here, population 30,000. And our church is 4.5 years old, and I do a lot to stay with coaching and assessments of church planters and helping them coach through the follow-up processes. So excited to be here.
You said sad or excited?
Sad to be.
Excited. I'm excited. Korean American. I don't know if that matters, but.
Oh yeah, I'm a Filipino American. That's important for me to say because I get stopped in public to ask if I'm Samoan or Hawaiian all the time. Having the tribal pineapple tattoo on my arm doesn't really help, I'm sure. And every time I tell people that I'm Filipino, they go, "Oh, I've already met a bunch of those guys."
Yeah. You're not unique anymore.
Yeah.
And by the way, in Brazil, pineapple means problem, so you're a problem. In other words,
you don't want these problems, guys.
Nice.
So, Sammy.
Hello, my name is Sam Ju. I'm Korean. I'm from North Carolina. I serve as an Asian Ministries Consultant at the Baptist Day Convention. I'm serving for 130 Asian churches in North Carolina, helping first generation, second generation leaders to develop their leaderships and to preach the gospel and to connect fam for the Great Commission. And also serve as a pastor at a church, which was a church plant about a few years ago, and we're reaching refugees in the town, the community. So, good to see you.
Pastor Thomas.
Hey, my name is Thomas, and I live in central New Jersey, close to Rutgers University, about 30 minutes outside of Manhattan. And I am a church planter, pastor many years, but went down the road to church planting about in 2009. And we are in the process of really trying to develop a church planting network as a church, planting 10 churches in the next 10 years, really saturating our area of Central Jersey, which is really local churches that are just committed to the gospel, but also really committed to living out incarnationally in each of its local community. So I have the privilege of doing that and also being a part of this fellowship that was started about two years ago. And it's really exciting to see all of you guys here because we tried to have a presentation like this last year, and I think we had about 5 people. So
yeah.
This is an immediate improvement from last year, thanks to Chris getting the word out.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's a joy to get to help to organize this along with you, Pastor Thompson. Would you share a little bit about the Next Gen Collab?
Yeah, so some of you might have seen us on Facebook, might be a part of that. If you are not familiar with that, if you go to Facebook and just pull up Next Gen Collab, send an invite, we'd love to have you connect with that group. The idea of this particular, where this conversation is coming out from, was that about 2.5 years ago, Dr. Paul Kim approached me and asked if I would serve as president of the Second Generation Asian American Fellowship. He didn't explain what that was. He just said, "You serve." And I was like, okay. I asked him, did he have a job description? He said, nope, make one up. So I said, well, look, this is where my heart is. I've grown up in the immigrant church, and I'm grateful for that, but I really sense that God is calling me to lead and to serve outside the immigrant church, really more in a third cultural context, in a multi-ethnic, multicultural setting. And at that time, I've talked with Chris a lot about it. There really were no models, there were no mentors, there was no paradigm or infrastructure or anybody that could really turn to. And it was a very difficult and lonely experience. And so when Dr. Kim said, hey, just lead this to wherever you think God is leading you guys to develop this conversation, I was like, well, I know that there's a lot of material and conversations that have already been focused on helping second-gen Asian American pastors address issues of English ministries within the immigrant church. But what about those guys who are moving outside of that stream and are swimming in a different stream? What are the resources and options that they have? And so we started this fellowship really to address that issue. What does it look like in an increasingly diverse culture like the ones that we live in major city centers? What does it look like for pastors to pastor multi-ethnic churches? Non-white pastors in particular, ethnic pastors, to really lead and to partner with others in developing multi-ethnic ministries and doing multi-ethnic church plants. And so that's kind of where this fellowship was birthed out of that passion and that vision. And so we kind of named it Next Generation Collab because it just seemed to be the most ambiguous, vague name that we could come up with and says, yes, that's a part of it as well.
So you can't say this is just for like those guys.
Exactly. It was as broad of an umbrella as we could. But really the heart of it was, you know, for those that are not Caucasian in particular that want to lead in non-immigrant settings, is there a place where we can begin to have the conversation? Is there a place where we can collaborate and share thoughts and best practices and strategies and find partnership and support and encouragement and mentoring and coaching and all of that? So that's kind of what this group is really, what we're hoping will really come out of this group.
Well, we're going to start off with some of our questions. And I want to thank you so much for sharing just the vision of our next generation collab. First question. So what motivated you to pastor to plants? And we start off with you, Pastor AJ.
So I'm not a planter, but I am, like I said, the associate pastor at my church. At a really young age, I got pushed towards the ministry bug, and I feel like it's something that I fought for a long time. My dad devoted his life to the Lord and still is taking me to school when it comes to serving him. You know, he was never a pastor. And even after I became the pastor of outreach, there are times where he just takes me to school. Like, we had an event where we are doing a Bible study of the men's group in the park. And he comes up to me, he's like, son, you got any Bibles we could pass out while we're here? And I was like, dad, we're just here to do a Bible study of the men. And he's like, son, there are people in the park. You could be passing out Bibles and sharing the gospel. And I was like, oh, man, you're so right. So while I've had a lot of other mentors, I think I'm definitely on the same page with a lot of guys who talk about their fathers just pouring into them. And other than that, just having pastors like the one I have now, he's in the back of the room, Pastor Sam, having pastors like him encouraging me to kind of shoot my shot has definitely been some of the biggest equipping factors in terms of me staying true to the calling.
For me, I grew up in a military home. My dad was in the Army, met my mom in Korea, so I bounced all over the place. But when we moved to Arizona, I moved to Arizona in the seventh grade. My dad had this calling, and actually from my best friend's church, Ian, his dad is a pastor, sent my dad out and started pastoring a church. So I'm going through puberty and became a pastor's kid all at the same time, right? It's a lot of stuff. And so I actually grew up to hate the church because I saw it from very legalistic point of view. I had to go do all these things that I didn't want to do. So I was the typical one way at church, one way at school, who I really was. And so I remember being on a mission trip in Mexico. We're sitting around a bonfire, and I just felt like God was calling me to pastor, which was just weird. And I'm going to a small Bible college in Springfield, Missouri. From there, I met my wife, who's from Alabama. It's the only thing Southern about me is Korean, you know what I'm saying? So I moved to Alabama. I've lived in Alabama for 12 years. In a transition from a church, we go to Chicago. They're looking for a guy to replant. And I go through the whole SEND Network NAM, become a NAM-approved church planner. But Chicago is not the fit for us. We try to go to Denver, because I lived a lot of my life out west. We try to go to Denver, plant a church, but at that time, SEND Network wasn't as organized as it is today. And so it's still different in regards to this city does it different than this city. So as we tried to press into Denver, we were living in Gadsden, Alabama, which is an hour from here. And long story short, there was a church that had gone through a split, and there were 60 people. The average age was 60. I stepped in. I was there already on staff. I helped the church as their interim pastor, and then just God opened up the doors, and I said, the best thing I can do to help this church, all the doors in Denver were closed. The best thing I can do for you is just to start all over, whether you call me as pastor or not. I was 30 years old at the time. From that, Cornerstone was born. We took that 60 people, average age 65, and Easter this year we had 614. So I'm just telling you, it's been a God thing, what has happened there. And so I used all the tools and resources that I learned from just church planning and things that I would do in a church plant setting in like a Denver. And we're doing all of it in Gadsden, where for us, we have one church for every 300 people, but 7 out of 10 don't go to church anywhere. Mm-hmm. So that's my context. Yes.
Sammy.
Yeah, I was a college pastor in a very typical Korean church, and I was also doing some campus ministry for international students, and then I get to see some international students who are coming to the Lord, and so I brought them to a Korean church where I was serving at, but for some reason there was a separation, there was not so much of a mingling between my college students and these international new believers, and I tried my best, but I realized that this Korean congregation was not ready. But there is a huge need for these international students need to be discipled and to be the to become the multiplier. So I felt like God was calling me to plant church for these people, even though they were very small. We had a Chinese believer, Indian believer, and a Mexican carpenter. And that was those were the three foundational members that I started church with. So that's how I came up with planting church with them.
Pastor Thomas.
How did I get into pastoring or church planting?
What motivated you to plant?
Plant.
Well, you're one of our planters, so yeah.
Yeah, so I pastored for a number of years, and I think for a lot of younger pastors, the reason why we wanted to plant churches was because we thought the guys ahead of us didn't know what they were doing. But they get it all wrong, right? Yeah. I mean, that's like part of the beauty of youth is that you're ignorant and arrogant.
Yeah.
I wanted to plant, like, I think my first year in pastoral ministry back in 94. And my wife said, you have no idea what you're doing. And I was like, you're right, so I'll wait. and, you know, it was back during those years where nobody planted churches. You know what we called church plants back then? Splits, right? I mean, that was the only way churches were planted was through splits. And so I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to do that. And I had no idea how to church plant, right? There was no material out there, really. And so I pastored, and I thought really pastoring was the only option. And I pastored for many, many years. But the way I grew up in right outside of Washington, D.C., and had a lot of different kinds of friends, Latinos, Indians, African-American, Hispanics, Asian-Americans, Caucasians. And one of the things that was an increasing dissonance within me in pastoral ministry, particularly in the ethnic church, is where I was really pastored for about two congregations for a number of years, was this increasing dissonance that I have a lot of friends that are non-Asians, but they have a real challenge being able to step into a mono-ethnic immigrant context. And I remember talking with my friends in a church who were very, very Americanized, like myself, and said, you know, why don't you invite your friends to church? And they said, well, I mean, they might come once, but they would probably never come back because they would say, you pastor in a Chinese church and I'm not Chinese. And I always felt that dissonance, that something was missing. And I think that beginning in like 94, 95 really led me on this journey and this path of really wanting to be in a different kind of a context where a church that looks like the church in the book of Revelations, you know, like I wanted to experience that now. I didn't want to wait until heaven to experience that. I wanted to hear every language and see every tribe and tongue. I wanted to hear the scriptures read in different languages in my church. I wanted to eat different ethnic foods when we had potlucks in my church. You know, and I wanted to see people dress differently and just the beauty of different cultures and all the richness that it represents, but able to be together, not because, you know, we have this natural attraction, but because of the beautiful work of reconciliation and the unity that we have in the gospel. And so after many years of pastoring in the ethnic church, I think fearfully I stepped out in 2009 and started going down that road, and it's been an amazing journey, and it's been a blast.
Thanks for sharing, brother. So we see the motivation of what had caused them to plant or to pastor, and leading to that motivation, there was preparation, obviously, for that to take place. So the next question is, how have you been equipped for effective gospel ministry? What does that preparation look like, that leadership development in your own life? Let me start with you, Pastor Dan. Yeah, we'll do a little different. Just
I think for me, I don't know if it's the same for a lot of y'all, but I never had anyone like disciple me, right? It was like, hey, you're a believer now, you're saved, you're in the church. And it's like you just figure stuff out on your own, right? And then you go to, you know, Bible college and you're learning this stuff. And then it was like the same thing. Like I learned a lot of head knowledge, but it's like, what's life transforming about the stuff that I'm learning? And so it was later on where I actually had a guy begin pouring into me, investing. His name is Brian Moore. He's a pastor in California. And in Bible college, he started investing in my life, just pouring into me, like just giving me some practical tools that I could actually use. And so as I did that as a student pastor, you know, I mean, coaching and mentoring today is a lot different than it was like even in the mid-2000s, right, when I was fresh out of Bible, because no one taught us any of this stuff, and we're just figuring out everything. And so him pouring into my life and finding the value of, not only do I have to be a self-starter in, you know, reading and finding podcasts, whatever the case might be, to invest in myself, I need someone who's further down the road, who is where I want to be, who can pour back into my life. Same thing with like marriage. Like my pastor, I love the first man I ever worked for, his name is Sammy Gates. He's since passed. But my marriage counseling was this: you know what to do. I was like, no, I don't. That's why we're here. That's what this is all about. I don't know. I thought marriage was very different. And just finding out, like, even as I went through my own hardships in our own marriage, and finding out, like, no, all this stuff is important. So for myself, I found just the value of having a seasoned man of God who could pour into my life, who could help me out, where I could just be real with them, and having friends that I could be transparent with. Here's my struggles, here's what I'm going through, has been the best thing for me. Outside, I mean, obviously we should be reading the Word, we should be reading books that are going to help us, and things you want, and you should be listening. And there's so many podcasts. I mean, even Carrie Newhoff podcast is, I think, one of the best ones you can listen to. You know, just leadership stuff we should be pouring into ourselves. Like, but having that voice, whether you have to pay for it or whatever, it's so important to have that voice who speaks into you, and you can talk about your situation. Like, the group things are great, but then connecting with that one person was like, hey, I'm going through this, and that person who can give that godly wisdom and insight. So for me, just having to search it out and then finding out that's like that, really that coaching, that mentoring, and then being a part of like networks like this, like, you know, my prayer is like, I'll connect with a guy that's like, now I can take this thing further, and I want to glean from those relationships. Right, but I think finding that intentional person is the best way that I've ever grown, I think, for ministry.
Thank you, Pastor Ben. What about you, Pastor Sammy?
Well, I think it really starts with my own conversion experience. I'm a fourth generation Christian and third generation pastor, but I got to meet Jesus personally when I was 23, the first year in the seminary. That was a quite journey. And then God called me and then sent me to the United States as a missionary. But since then, God sent me people on my way for me to grow as a disciple maker. The first pastor was a Korean pastor. He was a great disciple maker. But he just didn't talk about it, but he showed it in his life. He invited me at least once a week, every week. I never seen any pastor who invite the people in their home that often. But that itself was so huge that he opened up his life, and he did not really teach anything. He was like a bulldozer. He's like an actor. He doesn't really talk a lot. He just acts, just like Peter. But that really moved me, because I'm a thinker. I'm not really a lot of an actor, but he does. So he influenced me that way. And then my father is a pastor, but he is a man who loves the Lord, who loves the Word. And he memorizes scripture every day. He's 72 years old, but his goal is to memorize 3,000 Bible verses. And in his room, literally all wallpaper is Bible verses. And but he doesn't just put it up there. He lives it. Wherever he goes, he shares the gospel with the taxi driver and whoever he meets. So it's like the life itself has really influenced me a lot. And the third pastor is the pastor who is pastoring my church network. I merged with the American church, and the pastor is younger than me. He's like 35 years old, but he is really passionate for multiplication. He always emphasizes we need to multiply. Always think about hit by the bus. If you die today, who's going to continue your ministry? He always asks that question. So he asked me, like, Sammy, are you ready to die? But more important question is your church ready to continue without
for you
me?
To die?
Yeah.
It's a long question. We want to ask that.
So I think those three people influenced me in a huge way. So I want to do the same for other people. So, yeah.
Pastor Thomas.
Awesome. I love what you guys are sharing. I serve and work in a particular context, and so most of my responses are going to really be in that particular context. In Central Jersey, in the town that I live in, right outside of Rutgers University, it's extremely diverse, and I know that not every one of us are in that kind of a diverse context. But for where we do ministry, and I think this is probably. A principle that transfers, even if you're not in as diverse of an area as we are in Central Jersey. You know, first thing I tell my folks is, particularly folks that I'm training and developing as discipling and moving them towards leadership, is one, you've got to be comfortable developing cross-cultural relationships. In other words, you got to be able to converse and understand and embrace others that are not like you. And I think that's a transferable principle, even if you're in a more homogeneous setting, right? Because diversity and differences isn't just a matter of race and ethnicity, right? You're going to have people have different lifestyles. I mean, we're pastoring and planting in complicated times. I mean, the issues that our culture throws at us are so complex that, you know, you could have somebody that looks, that's your skin color, that could be in your socioeconomic, you know, class, but man, have a completely different moral value system and worldview than you, and how are you going to be able to connect with them? I think that's as much of a cross-cultural challenge as the racial, ethnic, socioeconomic ones. And so we really talk about that. You got to really be able to cross culture, whether that's your race or ethnicity, your economics, and then more importantly, your worldview. So I talk with my folks about that a lot, and we fortunately have a congregation that is extremely diverse. And so I always tell my young people, you know, make sure that you are learning how to converse and develop relationships with people that are a different generation than you and that look different than you. They represent a different ethnic culture than you. So I think the cross-cultural element is a huge one, particularly if we find ourselves or desire to be in a more diverse setting. You know, the second one was huge. What you were saying is just being able to spend time with somebody that can really let you into their life. And the term that I would use is authenticity. You know, I grew up being discipled by a pastor that kind of did the traditional armchair type of discipleship. He sat on one side of the desk. I sat on the other side of the desk. He gave me a 3-ring binder. I think there were like maybe 7 volumes. I mean, they were like this thick, and I'm like, are you serious? And I think I made it through 3 of them, which was pretty good. Did not finish all 7. It was something like, I think it was the Navigators 2-7 series or something like that. Yeah, I was just like, yeah, I can't do them all. I think I might have graduated high school and went to college by then. But it was very impersonal. It was very academic. It was very cerebral. And sure, I got to know a lot of content as far as scripture was concerned, but I never got to know him at all. Mm-hmm. And I feel like in our day and age, if you really want to mentor and develop leaders and disciples, you've got to be able to like show them who you are. You've got to bring them in enough. And AJ and I were talking about this before we went to bed last night. We're sharing
separate
hotel
beds.
Separate beds. Yeah, let's make sure that's clear. Although we did snuggle before. No.
We only had one pillow.
They know each other.
Exactly. We were just talking about, like, you know, how close do you let people in, so to speak, you know, in from your church? And so we were talking a little bit about that, and, you know, there still needs to be some discretion and judiciousness in how much you reveal to your congregant. But I think what your congregant really wants to see, and the people that you're leading and discipling, really what they want to experience and want to spend time with you is authenticity.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a huge, huge factor if we really want to train up people nowadays. Mm. And then the last one I was going to say, the multiplication pipeline, but you might
we'll talk about that
later.
Pastor AJ, what about you? How have you been developed for effective ministry now?
So it's been a series of different kinds of leaders in my life. Some of them have been like my lead pastor who decided to, out of nowhere, tell me that, hey man, I want you to just get into scripture more and more, because as I got involved in the church, you know, where I think the main goal of youth ministry is to assimilate teenagers both into adulthood as well as big boy church, right? And for me, that happened through playing guitar with a worship team. And I had a worship leader who was really like worship pastor, who really developed like my heart and affection for Jesus. But my pastor was really like, we can't just be emotionally affected by music as well. If it's not rooted in scripture, we might lose quite a bit. So he's like, kind of awkward, but he's like, I want you to spend time with me once a week just so we could walk through scripture. And if I didn't have somebody just intentionally walking through the Bible with me, I wouldn't have grown deeply in love with it. So those were two very different kinds of leaders who poured into me. But like I said, having the leaders that were both discipling me, who were always constantly telling me to be honest about the times where it was not okay, when I was not doing well, also made all the difference, you know, where they knew the fact was that it's really easy for me as a pastor to share what I ought to share. And I think pastors within the right setting, we're good at looking at the bright side. We're good at sharing how we're supposed to be taking things in light of scripture. But I wasn't really opening myself to how God was going to use men and to lift me up if I wasn't being honest about the crap I was going through as well.
Yeah.
So I had leaders like that. People who also connected me to out-of-house resources, other than in-house discipleship. I've had guys like different church plant catalysts who are members at our church who were like, hey, you know, Tim Keller was doing the city-to-city program, and he's like, we have people going as apprentices. I want you to go in as a coach and also get training. And I was like, awesome. And again, I wouldn't have had that if I didn't have another mentor who was like a godfather to me, plugging me into outside resources. And then it's still going to be things, even like this, you know, having gotten to know guys like Thomas over the past 3 years has been instrumental in my growth. And to kind of piggyback on what he said, as it's funny how when we're pouring into people, we're encouraging people to walk together, to do life together with a sense of openness and vulnerability. But at the same time, there is I find a lot of safe space with guys to mentor me like Thomas, where him being outside of my church, I kind of get to lay some extra walls down, knowing that he has a completely unbiased opinion. So that, again, that's another part where the Next Gen Collab has really ministered to me and affected me as a pastor.
But I'm judging you inside.
Well, I mean, I'm not afraid of your judgment on me, so I'm like way bigger than you.
He is a power lifter, so don't mess with him. Well, guys, we want to start off with some small group questions. Have you seen how the motivation, what led them to be pastors, to plant, also their path of preparation? What to learn from you guys, from your churches, how are we discovering?